The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at wje.com.
Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoeffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Few people who travel on U.S. highways are aware that a great deal of thought goes into the design and construction of roadways, from the layout of access ramps to the type of pavement to lighting and traffic controls. Even fewer stop to think about the research that informs the highway planning process in general. In fact, highway planning relies on its own research facilities, and they can be quite elaborate. But few are more elaborate than the Virginia Smart Road, which is a unique 2.2-mile, two-lane research highway built to interstate highway standards that's managed by the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute and maintained by the Virginia Department of Transportation. It isn't open to the public, but instead it serves as a laboratory for highway researchers to experiment and to learn. Here today to talk with us about the Virginia Smart Road is Dr. Tom Dingus, who's director of the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute. Tom, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Smart Road? How large is this facility?
Well, as you said, it's 2.2 miles long. It eventually will be a section of interstate highway at some point when traffic demands it. But for the foreseeable future, it is a test track. Even though it's built to interstate standards, it's got a high-speed turnaround at each end so we can use it for continuous driving.
So what are the main physical features on the facility? It's a two-lane road. You've got turnarounds at both ends. What about curves and grades and intersections?
It has a varying grade, so it's nearly flat at one end, and then it is as high as 6% grade toward the other end. And, it's, as I said, interstate standard, so it does have some horizontal curves, but they're relatively gentle. It has an instrumented intersection that we use periodically, mostly for active safety kinds of work.
So when you talk about an instrumented intersection, what kinds of instrumentation, what kinds of detectors do you have there?
For the intersection work, we're really looking into the future. So we do a lot of, for example, connected vehicle, connected infrastructure kind of work using dedicated short-range radios for things like violation warnings. So modern car is a driving computer. It knows where its location is, and of course it knows its speed and heading. And so the intersection broadcasts signal phase and timing so that you can alert a driver if they're about to violate a stoplight.
So that would be some kind of roadside detector and a communications system that sends a message inside the vehicle to the driver.
That's right. It's one of many, many applications for vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-infrastructure kinds of communications. You know, others include management of snow removal operations to imminent safety warnings for forward collision warning to mobility kinds of applications like dynamic rerouting.
I guess we'd classify all these under the label intelligent transportation systems.
That's right.
Do you do testing for a variety of outside vendors who have technology they want to experiment with?
Yes, we work actively with car manufacturers and suppliers on a pretty regular basis for both light and heavy vehicles. So they have advanced systems that they're interested in deploying. So we do a variety of tests for them to determine whether they're, you know, beneficial, whether there's any, how people really use them, whether there's unintended consequences for safety applications, things like that.
So would it be reasonable to describe that relationship as kind of a collaboration, or do they just come in and do their own tests and walk out?
The vast majority of times they just fund us to do the testing for them, serving, you know, for lack of a better word, like an underwriter's laboratory, if you will. Just an independent set of eyes on their new technology. Once in a while, they will come and do their own testing, but it's pretty rare.
Okay. So that your organization is in charge of the test itself?
Yes. Yes, typically speaking. And we do a lot of that kind of work. The Smart Road is also heavily used by National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, We do work for the Federal Highway Administration, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, and the Virginia Department of Transportation, of course. So we do a lot of public sector as well as private sector work.
But all designed and all intended to provide a better product, make automobiles and make the auto highway system safer?
Well, VTTI has over 200 active projects, so they really span the gambit. The connected vehicle ITS kind of applications were just one example. We also do, pavement research. We do work in quiet pavements, various open course friction grade kinds of things. We do a lot of work with pavement markings and lighting and things like that. We have what we call a variable lighting test section, so we can simulate 95% of the highway lighting in the U.S. And we also have an all-weather test section where we can make rain, snow, or fog over a half a mile of the roadway.
Oh, so you can even make snow in Virginia?
Well, yes. It has to be 28 degrees to make snow, and we're kind of in the mountains of Virginia, so there, at some time of the day, you can make snow about 100 days a year.
So in testing lighting, pavement marking, and even different weather conditions, do you have paid test drivers who are operating vehicles through the roadway?
We do that on occasion, but more typically we have, just naive human subjects that we recruit from the local area, paid participants, if you will, to test things. For example, in terms of visibility, whether you're talking about lighting or pavement markings, you want subjects of different ages and different genders and different visual acuities, for example, to test so you can determine the full range of benefits.
And in the test process, are you also instrumenting or measuring the performance of the drivers, the response of the drivers?
Yes, most often. I mean, we do, as I said, pavement and bridge kinds of things as well. But the majority of the work we do, we have paid participants that do the testing for us. And then we measure a variety of things. And it really depends on what the test is, but a number of factors related to performance, like brake reaction time or detection distance, all sorts of things.
So these people are driving your vehicles that are already instrumented?
That's correct.
Okay. And what kinds of parameters are you measuring in terms of the behavior of the drivers themselves?
It depends a whole lot whether we're, whether we're doing a fatigue study or we're doing a test of, the next generation crash avoidance system, or we're looking at a new type of 3D pavement marking. It varies across the board, but we test things like, steering. Their steering behavior, like in a distraction kind of study, their glance patterns and their eye off-road time, if you're talking about distraction. For fatigue, we look at things like slow eyelid closure and also steering. So for advanced collision warning systems, we often have some event happen where they have to react to, and we measure either braking or steering reaction time or both.
So the detail strikes me as very interesting and very important. So you're measuring what drivers are looking at, eye glance, and duration of gaze and things like that?
That's right.
Okay. Is the technology in the vehicle, or is it some kind of technology that's a helmet-mounted device that the driver wears?
We occasionally we use real, helmet-mounted eye tracking. We've done a number of studies like that, but more often, it's just a pretty high resolution video camera, and we code it manually for smart road kind of study.
Okay. We pause our podcast for a moment to thank our sponsor, WIS Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and material scientists who are solving problems throughout the built world. Visit their website at www.wje.com. So what about pavement work? Do you experiment with different pavement mixes or pavement designs?
Yes, we do. We have 12 different pavement sections, and they're, replaced reasonably often, depending on what kind of testing we're interested in doing. But, we have done tests with quiet pavements, as I said, and, more high friction kinds of pavements. And we think we do a lot of surface properties kind of work. We're the lead on a pooled fund effort on surface properties like friction.
So pooled fund, that's something I've just been learning about. My understanding is that that means that a group of states put in their own money to answer a question that they all have an interest in. Is that right?
That's right. And it's sometimes, you know, the Federal Highway Administration also puts in some money. So, you know, it creates a pot of funding, if you will, that then we can answer a variety of questions. So, and the pool fund work is we do a rodeo, if you will, where we states bring in their surface properties, friction measuring devices, you know, sort of the on-road devices that they have, and they sort of contrast and compare the data they're getting from those, and then we work with them to calibrate them because we know the exact friction on all of the pavement sections on the road.
So this is a particularly interesting use of this smart road, that you can focus on research questions that are important to a number of states. They can get answers, but they don't have to own the infrastructure, the specialized facility to do this.
That's right. And it works out pretty well, both for the states and the, you know, a lot of the private sector companies as well. You know, the world's changing and they don't necessarily want to have to buy and maintain infrastructure and staff to do these kind of tests. It's easier for them to outsource it. So that works out well for us.
So on the infrastructure side, on the pavement side, are you doing anything or have you done any work that's kind of similar to that long-term durability tests that were done in the Ashto road tests, which were, I think, go back 40 or 50 years?
You know, we don't typically do endurance kind of testing for either infrastructure or vehicles, like a lot of facilities do. It's really more, kind of short-term tests.
Okay. What about, do you do specialized work with heavy vehicles, like, let's say, overweight vehicles?
You know, not really in the pavement domain. We have done some of that in the past, but it's been a while. So what we typically do with heavy vehicles is really on the vehicle side as opposed to the infrastructure side. Mm.
Is there or are there bridges on the facility?
Yeah, well, there are three bridges, and, you know, one of them is the highest bridge in Virginia, which is 175 feet, which if you're from West Virginia is not that impressive,
yeah.
But it's the highest bridge in Virginia. And it really currently just serves as a conduit, literally and figuratively, for all the instrumentation to get across. We have another bridge, though, that's it's a test bridge for cathodic protection. And so it's, you know, cathodic protection, as you may be aware, is essentially you turn the bridge deck into a giant battery, and so you put a voltage through the rebar to repel chlorides to increase the longevity of the bridge deck. So this particular bridge has five different voltages, and then we can monitor it through a ground-penetrating radar to see how much it's degrading over time to optimize the amount of voltage that you need to protect the bridge.
So is this protecting against corrosion or deterioration of the concrete?
No, the corrosion of the rebar.
Mm-hmm. So that's a particularly important issue in climates like what we have here in Illinois, where we've got a lot of snow and ice, and we put chemicals on them to get rid of the snow and ice.
Yes.
Tell us something about the institutional responsibilities. Does VTTI own the facility?
Well, no, VDOT owns the roadway infrastructure, of course, because it will be, as I said, a section of highway, so they have the right-of-way and all of what you would call the normal road kinds of things. The university actually owns the research infrastructure, which is weather-making system and the intersection and the lighting system and all the data acquisition and DGPS kind of things that go on, fiber optic network that links it all together. So it's been a really good partnership now for 15 years.
And I assume that infrastructure is changing all the time as you're bringing in new technologies and testing different ideas.
Yeah, it's constantly a work in progress. So we're, installed roadside equipment for connected vehicle to infrastructure all along the length of the smart road to do that kind of testing. And it's fully connected from one end to the other, which is really nice for testing a variety of applications.
And how do you allocate access? That is, it sounds like you've got a lot of different customers or clients or collaborators. How do you make it available to different people in a way that you keep it busy?
Well, you know, it's fee for service, but, you know, it's relatively modest cost unless you're, you know, if you're making weather, it's more expensive. But if you're not making weather, it's relatively low cost, but it's, you know, we try to accommodate everybody, but it's really more or less first come, first serve until the schedule fills up. But it's, you know, it runs about 200 hours of paid research a month. And so if you came to me today and said I need to get on the Smart Road to do a study, it would be 3 or 4 months. So
there's a backlog, a waiting line.
Yes.
And do you cover all of the operating costs out of the fees for services?
You know, we cover about 60% of it, which, you know, if you look at laboratories, if you will, of this size around the country, that's about the best you can get. You know, the university kicks in some money, and the VDOT, of course, gives us some money for the management of the facility. But between those resources, it does pretty well.
So you feel you've got a good long-term future for this kind of a specialized facility?
Well, I think so. You know, if anything, it's getting more active over the years, and you know, it's always been in the black in terms of being able to pay for its own operations and infrastructure upgrade and things like that. So,
are there other test facilities operating in this part of the market?
Well, you know, this is unique for a number of reasons. You know, all of the ITS kind of infrastructure, the weather making system is, I think, the only one of its kind in North America. You know, the lighting section adds a lot of capability to do a lot of visibility kind of work. So, and there are other facilities around that do these kind of things, but this one has a lot of capability. So,
and do you have customers that come to you from outside the United States?
Yes, on a pretty regular basis. You know, institute-wide, not necessarily all on a Smart Road. We have we probably have 24 foreign sponsors.
Mm, okay. So that's a really good set of connections around the world, all interested in the motor vehicles on highways.
Yes. Yes. I mean, some aspect of it, you know, whether it's pavements or tires or mobility or safety, yes, they're all interested in those. It's all ground. The only thing we do is essentially driving research.
With the rapid evolution of analytic and simulation tools, do you see a kind of continuing place in the research market for a large-scale physical facility like this?
Yes, I do, and I think, but as you mentioned, it's, you know, things are moving ahead quite a bit, but I don't think we'll ever get to the point where we aren't trying to improve those models or validate those models or generate data to feed some other aspect of a model. So I really don't see it declining.
Yeah. So what you learn in some respects is part of the input to simulation tools, I would assume.
Yes. For example, we have a simulation package that was really developed by researchers here called Integration. And, you know, we're always doing different research that really feeds in Integration, whether it's truck speeds on different grades, different types of trucks or things like that to make the model more realistic and accurate.
So an interesting kind of connection really closes the loop between empirical analysis and modeling. So it's a very impressive facility. I haven't seen it. Do you have visitors who just come to look?
Oh, sure. We have, we have public open houses a couple of times a year. We bring in local school children from grade school, middle school, high schools as far as 60 miles away. And we talk all about the research we do, and we also have a general public open house once a year. But beyond that, we have visitors from around the world that come. We probably do a tour at least 2 or 3 times a week.
Mm. Well, it sounds good. I need to put it on my tour list. We'll try to maybe put a link to your website on our website so people who are listening to your presentation today can learn more about the test facility and what you're doing.
Yeah, please come by anytime.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time that you've spent with us, and I've learned a great deal from you. Look forward to being in touch.
Thank you.